to his mess. Can we go for a retake on that one, please? I'm rolling, Cecil.
Yes.
Boom, boom, boom. Testing, testing, 1, 2. 1, 2, over and out, Roger Wilco.
But Paul,
this is I saw three ships concerning in on Christmas Day and Christmas Day.
Paul, you're a little bit quiet, Paul.
Is that for a level, Cecil?
Too. Speak up.
Oh, sorry. How's that for a level, Cecil?
No, it's too loud now.
How's that for a level, Cecil?
Better.
1, 2, 1, 2, buckle my shoe. 1, 2, 1, 2, I touched all the poo. 1, 2, 1, 2.
Paul, come on, we're going. What? We're going.
Oh.
Get ready, go.
Oh. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Paul Thacks Diary podcast on the week commencing the 24th of December to the 31st of December. It's the very, very last one. I'm a bit... I'm burping.
You're right, Paul.
My diaphragm's in spasm.
Paul.
And now that's a beautiful way to open the podcast. And I welcome you to it. You remember last week? It was the week before Christmas. Not happened, if I'm honest with you. But the 23rd of December was dawning on me. And obviously everybody knows Paul Thacks doesn't go to bed on the 23rd of December. But he stays up all night so that he can be tired and sleepy come Christmas Eve. And that's just where you find me, dear diary. In between the land twixt 23rd of December and 24th of December. So, Cecil, for the final week... Sorry, Maundy Monday kittens scrabbling at my sofa. Cecil, please, for the final week, can you start off your final date reading, please? You do it so beautifully.
Thank you, Paul. 24th of December, Christmas Eve.
It's 4:02 a.m. and I can hear somebody outside. I'm going to look with my torch. Maybe it's Father Christmas. Maybe he's come on a night early. I'm going now. I'll be back in a second. I'm back now, dear diary. I saw someone in the back garden. I couldn't make out who they were, but they were all dressed in black and had a balaclava on and were chubby. But then they saw my torch and looked up at me for a few seconds. Who do you think it was? I think that Mum and Dad are deluding themselves. Deep down they know the dark truth, but they dare not speak the real name of it. It's my belief that on the 23rd of December / 24th of December night time, Father Christmas comes and does a sort of, you know, recce of all the houses so that he knows how to get in, the best method of entry and exit, to deliver all the presents to the girls and boys and me. Now, Mum and Dad claim that they don't believe in Father Santa, but if he doesn't exist, then where do all the presents come from? Anyway, Mum and Dad won't believe me if I told them I saw someone in the back garden anyway, Father Christmas, doing a recce. So I just won't bother telling them, don't really talk to them much about things that I see and think. They tend to mock me. I'm going back to sit at my desk and reading my old copies of Amstrad Action from the 1980s because, I don't know, it's just something to do, isn't it? It's 6:53 now in the morning time. I'm feeling really jolly tired already. I'm not entirely... Oh, no. I don't know if I can stay awake for all today. I certainly won't be having soup for lunch, I can tell you that. There's definitely risk of splashdown. I went and got Dad and Mum up at about 8 o'clock, demanding to go around town. I just love shopping on Christmas Eve. Everyone's so happy and full of festive cheers. So I got my Rudolph jumper on and my red corduroy trousers. And just to be a jaunty super Christmas elf, I put a Santa hat on me. I was the most festive chubby lad this side of the North Pole. God, I wish I could be Father Christmas's apprentice. Your job this week, my apprentice people, is to go out and spread some Christmas cheer. So I'd do that. I'd just go out for Sir Lord Allen about the Christmas, and I'd go over sailing, if that's the thing that people do still. I might put a cripple on my shoulders and walk around looking for gooses that are as big as boys, and then get wistful when that cripple dies. Anyway, we went shopping into town, and a couple of kids were staring at me because I think they thought I was Father Christmas, minus the facial hair. Then we did my very, very favourite pre-Christmas activitox. We went to the very festive garden centre and had the most elaborate hot chocolate drink in the world. It's hot chocolate at the bottom with brandy in it. Then a lump of chocolate is placed in the hot chocolate, along with marshmallows and mellows and a big layer of squirty cream. Then some more marshmallows and marshmallows. What's the difference? Put in the squirty cream. Then there's a dusting of grated chocolate. Then there's a flake stuck in it. Then there's edible glitter sprinkled on it. And then a spoon for stirring, but it's made from very, very, very dense ginger biscuit. Oh, I'm almost getting diabetes just describing it to you. It's like something from the Charlie and his Chocolate Factory. They do cost £5.99 each, but they're worth it. And do you know what? The best bit is, Mum can never, ever, 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 ever finish hers, so I get to eat it. And there's also a lucky dip, which is free with every drink bought. It's meant for kids, but they're not going to stop you, am I? So I went. I got three things from it. I got one was blue wrapping paper, one was green wrapping paper, one was red wrapping paper. But Mum says I have to save it for Christmas tomorrow. Oh, I'm very, very excited. We came home for about 3 p.m. Mum went to put the tea on, and Dad went to wrap up the presents he'd bought in town. And I went and sat on my bed and just sort of writhed around in excitement with Teddy Watkins. It's just, I can't, it was Christmas Eve. Oh, no. It was just so exciting. I imagined I was a little boy and a snowman had come alive outside. But it wasn't a dream. I think I just thought it was a daydream, but I didn't sleep. Anyway, at tea time, some policemen came to the door. I was terrified that me and Tony had done something to the newsagents when we were very, very, very drunk. But apparently someone had broken into sheds down the road and they wanted to know if anybody had seen any suspicious activity. So I told them about the figure I'd seen in the garden last night, this morning. And the policeman didn't share my view that it was Father Christmas come early either. Rubbish. It wasn't until about 9 p.m. this evening, today, that I realised I haven't opened my advent calendar for 2 days. So, I got them all off my wall and brought them downstairs, and me, Mummy and Daddy all shared the last few chocolates whilst we watched A Muppet's Christmas Carol. Because the best Christmas film ever made, there's no debate about that needed, it just is a matter of fact. It was so festive. I got the most festive of all feelings in my stomachs. It's lovely. Right, well, it's 11:53 p.m. and I'm so excited. I'm sat in bed with the duvet up to my chins, my diary laptop on my knees, and I'm just looking round again at my room. All the decorations are glinting in the little bit of light coming through the crack in the door and from the screen. I just sort of keep spasming with excitement. I put Teddy Watkins in his little waistcoat, and he looks like he's smiling at me. It's lovely. This is the most wonderful feeling I ever have. This is my favourite night of the year. I only wish it could happen maybe once a month. But would it be as special? Yes, it would. Okay. It's 2:53 now. And even though I haven't slept in 2 days, I'm so excited I can't sleep. I want my presents, I want them. I've tried everything, and nothing's tipping me over into sleepy, dreamy, snooze land. So I'm going to try writing a story, because normally when the second I try to write any kind of fiction, I just pass out because I'm so bored. You know what's more boring than reading a book? It's writing one. So, I now present to you Once Upon a Christmas by Titiana Prendelminge, a.k.a. Apothax. And then you. Once upon a Christmas Eve, in the land of wishes and make-believe, lived a grumpy little elf who lived all alone. Yes, by himself. He didn't care for Christmas Day. Oh, hang on, that's Grinch, isn't it? Let me try again. Cecil was dead to begin with. Oh, no, that's Scrooge, isn't it? Okay, try again. Different Christmas story. One day, a small boy built a snowman which came to life. No, that's not right, is it? Oof. Hey, it's hard to come up with an original Christmas story, isn't it? Once upon a time, there was the boy king, the saviour of all mankind, born in a manger. No, that's been done. Okay, right. Original story. Here we go. They staggered down the snowy-covered street, mounds of white powder covering the world like a cold, smothering duvet. Hand in hand, they struggled to walk as the biting winds pummeled their faces. She fell, exhausted by the pain in her guts. The baby was coming, and he was coming now. He carried her to the nearest doorway. The houses were oblivious to the poundings on the doors, and then she gave an almighty scream, and the baby shot out of her body parts. He grabbed it and wrapped it in his scarf, and they laid there, huddled together as the cold enveloped them. All night, cold, dark, snowy, bloody freezing. Dawn came, and the door to the house was opened by a very handsome young man. His chins were pert, certainly, and his male bosom was very ample. The scent he gave off was as alluring to women as the most alluring man's scent has ever been. He looked down on his doorstep. There were two frozen corpses laying upon his doormat. He knelt down as he moved the... As he knelt down, the postman came to the door, and the dog absolutely lost her shit. Excuse me, with the power of editing. Silence. As Paul knelt down, he saw some movement in the corpses. A muffled whisper came from inside the in-between bit of where the corpses were. Somewhere under the mass of coats, fur, and death. Paul, quickly and powerfully, ran to the kitchen and got several spatulas as he then ran to the front of the house and sort of pried the bodies apart. For you see, excuse me. Inside was the tiniest baby teddy bear he'd ever seen. It was clutching onto life like a barnacle on the whale's testy. Paul scooped up the tiny bundle and rushed it into the living room. He sat down next to the fire, cradling the tiny baby bear in his arms. He unwrapped the scarf from its body, and it had a name tag, Watkins, on it. So that's what Paul named him. Teddy Watkins. By the end of the day, the authorities had come and removed the dead adult teddy bears from Paul's doorstep. But Paul, being a coy little boy, didn't tell them about the baby he'd adopted. He cared for that bear like it was his own child. And, as the years passed, Paul taught it all he knew of the world. Relentlessly, the years marched on. The two chums were inseparable, except for a bit when some bitch of a doll got foisted upon them, but she got dealt with in time and in a fire that no one ever found the corpse of. Sorry. The years marched on. They were inseparable. Everywhere Paul went, Teddy Watkins did too. By and by, Teddy Watkins grew into a fine figure of an alive, living teddy bear, reaching almost 3 feet high by the age of 8 years. But then, on the 20th of December, which is Teddy Watkins' 9th birthday, just as they were sitting down to a round of birthday cakes, there was a knocking on the door. Paul went to answer it very beautifully, and he can walk quite easily. His ankles never hurt him. At the door were stood two large male teddy bears. They towered over Paul, looming like Paul Hollywood in the nude. As soon as he opened the door a crack, the teddy bears burst in. They put a bag over Paul's head and knocked him unconscious. They searched the house for Teddy Watkins and found him cowering under the sofa like a frightened little baby boy. They dragged him out of the hiding place and stuffed him in a sack. Paul came round and said, "Get off, man, little boy." But then the two teddy bears kicked him in the face really hard and it hurt, and Paul went to sleep for a bit because he was unconscious. Paul came to by having hot, foul air blown into his mouth from his father's ancient withered lungs. Cecil was giving him the kiss of life, even though Paul didn't need it, and he also received some of the spittle of life. He didn't like that at all, and he was a little bit sick in his throat. Cecil was very old and confused and didn't understand that Paul didn't need the kiss of life. The modern world scared and confuses him, and he's just old and stupid. Thought he was going to say something. Paul sat bolt upright, slightly headbutting Cecil in the chin as he did so.
"Where's Watkins?"
said Paul, demanding to know, with all the authority of Alan Sugar, I don't know. They searched the whole house, but there were no sign of him. Luckily, Paul had been recording a video for YouTube before the bears came in, and the camera didn't stop recording, so they watched the tape. The two bears had come in, almost instantly found Teddy Watkins. They pulled him from under the sofa, held him upside down and looked at his label and said,
"This is the one."
Then they turned him over, looked him in the face and said,
"What I said, the boss wants to see you, Teddy Bear Kingdom's future prince. It is an awful shame you're not going to live long enough to claim the throne."
And then they stuffed him in a sack. "Jeremy, you said you could do a Cockney accent. That was supposed to be like a Cockney thug voice, not your own posh voice," said Jezzy.
"Look, I've told you countless times throughout this thing, I cannot do other accents."
"Maybe it's time we look at your contract and maybe don't get you in to do extra parts, Sir Jeremy."
"You know that, kicking the bollocks."
"What?
Never mind."
Sorry. Paul looked at Cecil. Cecil looked at Paul. Margaret asked them both to get out of the way of the television, because she was watching, let's say, Watercolour Challenge.
Teddy Bear Kingdom?
They both exclaimed in shock and disbelief. They knew such realm must exist due to the fact that Teddy Watkins was an alive, living teddy bear, but no human had ever been able to find its location. Paul then girded his loins in private. Then he told Cecil and Margaret that he was going to search for Teddy Watkins and not rest, ye merry gentlemen, until he was found and brought home. So Cecil picked up his mobile phone and rang their good friend Tony and asked him if he wanted to come on a Christmassy adventure. And he said he did. Yeah. 2 hours later, and the three gentlemen were sat round the kitchen table having a brainstorming session. In the end, it was decided. They'd bring 8 bags of crisps each, 2 litres of cola-flavoured drink, and several bags of mints for the road, because Cecil gets horrendous walking breath. It's like morning breath, but he only gets it when he's walking. Paul only knew of one man who could get them to Teddy Bear Kingdom, and that man was large, bearded, and full of holiday cheer. After they'd visited Brian Blessed, he pointed them in the direction of the North Pole, to where Father Christmas might live, who might know. Brian was so full of festive spirits that he gave them a plane ticket to where they needed to get to, with Blessed Airlines. What a kind man. He also wished to part the information that
Gordon's alive!
And then he bid us on our way. 18 hours later, we were stood on the gates of Father Christmas's kingdom. Paul was just weeping with joy. And then a tiny elf appeared and it said,
Hello?
Hello, yes. If you please, we're wishing for an audience with the Father of Christmas, young elfling. Could you please escort us to them, please?
Said Cecil, being overly polite and saying please too many times. The large green and red doors opened slowly, and the three travellers were met with a chorus of glorious singing. 1,000 elves all working on building toys, but also singing Happy Christmas tunes. I think you might know what that sounds like. Paul fell to his knees, so overcome with emotions was he. Inside were all the colours, sounds, sights, smells and sensations of Christmas. Every elf busy working on all manner of stations, concocting toys, food, snacks, nibbles, games, crackers, and one just sort of scooping avocado straight into his mouth. Perpetually.
It was amazing.
The travellers were led into a large hall where Father Christmas was sat at a huge desk, reviewing the naughty and nice list. Paul waddled over, I waddled over to him and smushed my face in his big white beard and said, I'd like a new camcorder, a new computer, no socks, a space pen, a puzzle compendium, the latest games console, a life-size cardboard cutout of the female cast of the British Empires, and 97 or more surprises. Now! Father Christmas pushed Paul off him and just laughed with his big chunky belly laugh. Santa clapped his hands and called for hot chocolates all round. Over Christmas beverages, Paul told Father Christmas what had happened to Teddy Watkins. St. Nicholas looked very, very, very worried. The bears from Teddy Bear Kingdom should not be able to get into our realm.
And vice versa.
Apparently something had gone wrong with the universe. Father Christmas had suddenly went pensive for 20 minutes, thinking about the problem, when all of a sudden the door to the hall that they were in burst open, and the Easter Bunny staggered in and collapsed to the floor.
And then floor.
It lay there in a pool of ever-growing blood. The men rushed over to the creature. It had a knife protruding from its stomach. It struggled to speak, and then it just murmured the word,
Krampus.
I'm sorry. Sorry, stop there. Can we just stop? Sir Jeremy, you're supposed to be a dying Easter bunny. Is that the kind of reading that they would tell you to do at RADA when you went for that weekend?
I never really listened to what they were saying. I only ever wanted to work on Jeeves and Wooster. I think I'd fit in quite well there. It made me feel ever so goosey.
What?
How do you feel when the parson's done the deal? Ever so goosey. Well, for what's the face for?
I'm sorry, Sir Jeremy, I think that's it. I think that's you done for doing voice parts. I bid you farewell. Happy Christmas. Please go and sit at the back.
All right. Margaret, I'm going to come and sit with you, if that's all right.
Oh, fucking hell.
Right, can we just continue the recording from there? The Easter Bunny staggered in and collapsed on the floor. It lay in a pool of ever-growing blood. The men rushed over to the creature. It had a knife protruding from its stomach. It very pained, struggled to speak, and it murmured the word,
Krampus.
It then convulsed and died. Father Christmas withdrew in terror.
It returns!
Oh, nice reading, Cecil.
Thank you.
Father Christmas said that, and then he fled the room, leaving Paul, Cecil and Tony confused and not a little scared, if I'm being honest with you. Hours passed. Eventually, an elf came to see Paul, and he handed them all a device. one each, not one to share. And it said that it let them travel between dimensions. Sexual Paul said, hang on, if there's a realm just for teddy bears, does that mean there's like a dolly realm? A toy car realm? Maybe a board game realm? Board game realm? A Nintendo Wii realm? You know, is there a realm for every individual type of item? And the elf just simply said,
yeah.
Oh, I thought that's peculiar. The gentleman got their devices and pushed the single button on it. Around them, the world transformed. Walls melted away. Objects morphed into different objects. As the universe just went weird around them. The men looked around at all the just weird shit going on. One second they were just surrounded by jigsaws. Then the next, posters for Minecraft. Then the third was a old cup of tea. Then there was some cross-stitching magazines. And then there was a loot crate one. I don't know, shit I can see. In the end, teddy bears appeared. So Paul thought, right, let's just stop here. But as soon as they materialised in the Teddy Bear Kingdom universe, they were set upon by 10 large furry bastards. Unfortunately for Paul, Tony and Cecil, they'd materialised right in the middle of the court of the new King Bear. And no sooner had they appeared than they were thrown into Teddy Bear Kingdom dungeons, because obviously they knew that that Paul was a good chum to Teddy Watkins and therefore might be an instigator in a rebellion if he got, you know, pamphlets out about what's going on. Oh. As they were sat in the cold stone prison, Tony began to openly weep like a woman would. His sobs were loud, and they carried throughout all the cells. Then, from the next cell, they heard a very familiar cry of,
"Where's the crisps?"
The men knew that this was Teddy Watkins' catchphrase. Paul called out to him. He replied. He was unhurt for now, but was marked for execution in the morning. This caused great anger in Paul to rise up. Paul the powerful and Paul the very handsome emerged from Paul the locked in a dungeon. Paul just looked round at the walls of the prison, and it looked like they were just constructed from wood or some shit. Paul suspected that stones and metal didn't exist in this universe. So Paul used his significantly majestic bulk, jeez, and just ran at the wall like a bull in a poorly constructed china shop. And he used his boobledge to smash through the wall, reuniting him with his best Teddy chum. Teddy Watkins told the three wise men and the three brave men and the three attractive men. That's, you know, all three men in one thing. There wasn't nine men. Sorry, I don't think there was. Lost my place, I got too excited. Teddy Watkins told the men how all the evil versions of each world were taking over. You know, it all started several years ago when Teddy Watkins' teddy parents, the king and queen of Bear World, had been exiled from their kingdom by an evil bear tyrant. Over the years, all the other kingdoms have been overthrown by the evil versions of, like I say, of what's going on. But all but one universe, the central hub of worlds.
It's only a matter of time before he came and destroyed it all,
said Teddy Watkins, sounding slightly pained.
Before who destroyed it all, please?
Said Tony stupidly.
Oh, the Krampus, the evil Father Christmas. He's been systematically overthrowing worlds, removing Father Christmas's allies so he can finally become the nasty King of Christmas,
said Teddy Watkins, sounding a bit like he's got a cold.
Suddenly the doors of the cell burst open and in walked two large teddy bear bastards. The ones that had been at Paul's house that gave him a right pounding. They tried to grab Teddy Watkins from Paul, but Paul knew what to expect now, and he shouted at Tony to pass him his lighter. And Tony did pass him his lighter, and Paul made the flames come from it, and the two teddy bears recoiled in horror, because, you know, they're from the 80s, they're highly flammable. The three men and one teddy bear ran down the hallway searching for, you know, those devices that they got given, because they were taken off them, obviously. And Paul, even though he was chubby, could run really fast and for a long time, because he was so powerful and handsome to boot. They ran past cell after cell after cell after cell after cell of imprisoned teddy bear people. And Cecil, being the kind and gentle old soul he is, he opened the doors, because they weren't even locked. The teddies are so good, if someone naughty just says, go in there, they just stay there until they die of starvation. But Cecil opened them and let them out. And within a full hour, just there was a teddy bear uprising was afoot. Within 2 hours, Paul, Cecil and Tony were hailed as heroes of Teddy Bear Kingdom, while Teddy Watkins was crowned King of Teddy Land. But despite all the dubious celebrations, they knew they had to go on a quest to kill the Krampus and save the world, and indeed the universe, from a right evil shit. They said a very teary goodbye to Teddy Watkins, who had to stay behind and rule over Teddy Bear World for a bit, because that was his job now. The three men dialed in the address for their own world, the central hub, the nexus of everywhere. Instantly they were transported into Father Christmas's hall, to the exact point in space but not time where they left. The scene that greeted them was Father Christmas locked in mortal combat with a snarling hairy black creature whipping at Father Christmas with a heavy thick chain. Santa Claus was doing his best to deflect the metal chain, but Father Christmas only had a feeble candy cane. Father Christmas looked over at Paul. He held out his hand like a Doctor Who might, and golden dust just shot over to Paul like some kind of festive ejaculation. Then the Krampus smashed down his chain on Father Christmas's head, which exploded in a explosion of bone and flesh. And then the Krampus turned, screamed at Paul, and disappeared in a puff of scary smoke. The gold dust floated around Paul and began to attach itself to Paul's every crevice. Paul's transformation was almost instantaneous. A beard shot out of his fat face. His clothes turned to red robes. His belly shrunk and shook like a bowl full of jelly. He was now the Father Christmas. And then there was a blinding flash of light in front of Paul. The Krampus bastard had returned. It slowly walked over to Paul, snarling, its fangs dripping with some kind of ooze, claws glinting in the light, and the razor-sharp horns jutting from its forehead. It put its snout up to Paul's face, its twisted black horns pressed against Paul's forehead, and it slowly opened its mouth. Most of Paul's face was enveloped in the gape of its teeth when it suddenly gave a yelp, and then it spasmed. And Paul backed away in horror, not because he was frozen with terror that he didn't dare move to begin with. He was just standing up to it, all brave, like a Harrison Ford might. He didn't shit himself. Black liquid shot from the mouth and nose of the Krampus, and Paul ran away a little bit, because he wanted to not get his clothes dirty. Everybody looked at the Krampus, and they could see a large golden spike protruding through its body. The Krampus began to convulse and fell to the floor. And behind it was a tiny little furry boy, Teddy Watkins, wearing golden armour. It had vanquished the evil Christmas shit. And Teddy Watkins said,
"Oh, the Krampus was the king of all evil amongst the universe. His death in this realm will filter out to all the other realms. We have freed many people from the tyranny of a horrific monster."
And I said,
"Oh, right. And why not, I helped, didn't I? I was good."
Nobody replied. I mean, all was well in the world. apart from the world of obsolete recording formats. Everyone was miserable in cassette tape and VHS world. No one's ever going to return to that like they might do the vinyl, idiots. Anyway, sorry. Paul was Father Christmas. Teddy Watkins was a king or something. Things turned out all right. Cecil found a nice toupee and Tony had some slippers given to him for some reason. The three heroes returned home, but to not a single welcome. No one had even heard of their deeds. In fact, no one even believed them and threatened to have them committed if they talked about it too much. But, such heroes as they were, they just agreed to not take any credit to about it. What? That doesn't make sense. Safe in the knowledge that they'd done right, and Paul was sexual. Not with a woman, but, you know, he exuded an air of sensuality. The years that preceded, Paul never actually got round to getting up to Lapland to do his Father Christmas' duties, and in the end that power was given to some little shit from Poland. Typical, innit, coming over here taking our jobs. Hard Brexit hashtag. Sorry. Paul was looking particularly attractive, like he does most of the time, even first thing on the morning, and he's a very, very good kisser, and he can cook up to 4 different meals. He doesn't smell either, and he's never soiled himself. So, you know, he would make a good Father Christmas if... And he would go and do the job if he had to, if he ever got made Father Christmas, please. Thank you. The end. Sorry, dear diary. It's 4:48 in the morning on Christmas morning now. I should have fallen asleep. That should have put me to sleep, but it didn't. It went a bit rambly. I'm sorry, I'm gonna... It's finally Christmas Day. Praise be to the Christmas Lord. It's 9:47 a.m. and Mum and Dad won't get up yet. They're both very, very tired for some reason. Don't know why. Why are they always so tired? I didn't get to sleep till 4:49 a.m. And Father Christmas must have, some point after that, filled my Christmas stocking while I slept. You know, and getting excited. There was only 3 presents in my Christmas stocking, but that's fine. It's fine. I got an imitation post office stationery set with fake stamps, but the stamps had my fat face on them. I got an electronic 20 questions game. And I got burps. And I got a bumper word search pen with book. With pen. It's a highlighter pen, sorry. It was almost as if Father Christmas wanted to keep me busy in the morning for some reason. Well, it did keep me busy. Mum and Dad got up about 10 a.m. We had our usual Christmas morning breakfast. You know, that being a large box of Marks and Spencer's Belgian biscuits. The best biscuits in all the world. And you can quote me on that. Thank you, Mr. Marks and or Spencer's. If Marks and Spencer's goes under, like flicking Woolworths and Burton's and Debenhams and British Home Stores and all that shit, I don't actually know what I'm going to do on Christmas morning without my Marks and Sparks biscuits. I never even thought of that. Sorry. Then we had presents. Cecil and me like to take it as slow as possible to make the gift opening process as long as possible. Mum, on the other hand, tears through hers like they're going to be taken away from her. She got 3 different sets of bath/shower stuff, you know, like face creams and hand wash and all that sponge shit. She was not keen on that for some reason. I got Mum a jar of Mellow Bird's coffee and a box of 80 tea bags. Never know what to get her. And I couldn't tell whether that went down well or not. I think it didn't. Certainly didn't when I said, "Go on, love, make us a cuppa then." Threw them at me. Dad got a cravat. He needs that neck coverage just under his chin. It gets chilly. It looks like a turkey's waddle. very pendulous under chin flap. But Cecil thought the cravat was a handkerchief and blew his nose on it. It's ridiculous, the man's got no culture. Blew his nose on it, and then we told him it was a cravat, and then he just shoved it under his chin. And I'm sure I saw like a string of snot going from his chin to the fabric. Cecil also got a big book of 50s starlets from Helga down the road, and Mum made him put it back in the box and take it back to her. It was apparently incredibly inappropriate. Not even sure who this Helga woman is, to be honest with you. Why she's giving Dad books of starlets, sexy starlets with the weird pointy bosoms. Not a peculiar time to wear a brassiere. Oh, excuse me. Mum and Dad got loads of other stuff, but it's not very thrilling. I, however, got the following things. 1. A travel cup. 2. The highway code. 3. Leather gloves. And 4. 10 fucking driving lessons. 5. Into an absolutely foul, foul mood. What a load of utter shit. We don't even have a car. Why in the flying tits on a broomstick would I need to learn how to drive? I've locked myself in my bedroom. I spent 37 minutes lying on my bed just crying. I wanted a DVD and electromagnetic gadgets. I'm so furious this Christmas has been ruined by not buying me what I wanted. I've just smashed up all my board games. I'm going for a walk in the snow. And I'm going to weep like some kind of sad man in a Maudlin music video who's in a Maudlin music video where he's playing Batman who's brooding. It's 23:31 p.m. now. I've got into the brandy. I'm into the brandy and a randy. I'm drinking to forget. Forget this rubbish Christmas presents haul and the dinner. We had a f***ing chicken. Not even a turkey. Then, when I thought nothing else could go wrong, Dad knocked over the Christmas tree again. So Mum and Dad aren't talking to me because I was apparently ungrateful and because I laughed at Cecil because he got a bauble on his... He got a bauble on his cock because he was wearing his... It was wearing his dressing gown and it shattered on his ancient withered old acorn. And Mum had to very carefully with tweezers pull out a shattered bauble from his foreskin. And I was just sat there laughing at him. Once all the shatteredness had gone, Dad got up and just poured an entire tub of Lynx Africa in my hair. So I had to go have a shower because he said I fucking stank. Mum and Dad also aren't talking to me because apparently I'm an ungrateful little shit and the driving lessons are very, very, very expensive. You know what? I've got a good mind to drink the rest of Mum's brandy and then just go eat the whole jar of coffee I bought her. Shitty Christmas. 26th of December. Aunt Beryl and Uncle Stanley came this morning. They had 3 giant bags full to bursting with presents. One for me, one for Mum, and one for Dad. I couldn't believe what they got me. 15 jigsaws. When I opened the 5th one, I looked up Mum and Dad, and they could tell I was about to kick off again. They both asked me if they could just have a quick word with me in the kitchen, and they dragged me out into the hall and gave me a stern talking to. Apparently I'm going to have to change my ways, I'm a spoiled brat. I act like an impudent 13-year-old. I told them I could get an erection, don't know what you're talking about, most 13-year-olds can, it's fairly common for the boy ones anyway. Neither of them got the joke. I told them, they told me to stop being so materialistic. So do you know what I did, dear diary? instead of running upstairs and breaking some of my own belongings and brooding like Batman would, I actually heeded their festive words. And I tried to act like a normal, grateful shit. So I went back into the room, thanked Auntie Beryl for the gifts, and continued opening 10 other fucking jigsaws. Later in the afternoon, after the meal of roast potatoes, carrots, some minced-based pie, we all sat round and played charades. It's the most boring of my life. Boring afternoon of my life, sorry, that confused me. And we weren't even allowed to put the TV on. It's not fair. In fact, we've not been allowed to have the TV on since Christmas Eve afternoon. It's odd thinking about it, because I looked at the TV guide and there's tons of shit circled that Dad wanted to watch. Oh, I don't care. This Christmas has been the worst ever. I'm going to go to bed angry and drunk on rum this time. I might try and punch a wall like a hard man in a film. You know, I'm sure I've seen Batman do that in one of his broody films. No. Bloody Christmas bastard.
27th of December, Baba.
Self, silly sausage. Right, unbelievable. I am as flabbergasted as a chubby lad could possibly ever flicking be. I mean, I thought my flab could be gasted no more, but then it went 77% more gasted. I don't even know where to start on this one. Well, I guess I'll start with how I was woken up. Right. Don't know what time it was, but while I was dreaming about kicking a penguin in the face, you know, because I was furious about Christmas, even in my sleep, I, in my dream, I just heard a lot of loud popping, like fireworks or something. And then I woke up to see Mum, Dad, Beryl and Uncle Stanley stood over me holding party poppers. And they were letting off in my face over and over again, continually. I was confused, terrified and quite a bit hungover. Thankfully, I didn't have an erection. I very nearly screamed at them, but then I looked down and I was covered in the streamers from the party poppers, and I thought, oh, this is nice. I feel a bit like Gulliver from Gulliver's Travels. And then I said, what's going on here now to me? What was happening? And Mum got my hand and made me get out of bed. Thankfully, I was wearing pyjama bottoms. I put my dressing gown on and I was led downstairs into the front living room. Everybody was smirking at me. I imagined they'd got me a Russian bride and she'd finally come in the post. But no. I walked into the living room and the TV was on and there was dozens of gifts around the Christmas tree and a wide selection of snacks and nibbles and drinks. And I just thought, oh, what? And I just screamed, what the hell is going on? I demanded to know. I stamped my foot. Hurt my ankle a little bit, but it's fine. Everyone sat down and pointed at the TV. It was showing the morning Christmas mass from some church or something. I said, why are you showing me a recording of that Christmas morning mass thing that you watch? I said. And Dad said,
Paul? That's no recording!
And they all kept looking at me and smirking. Still half asleep, I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. I got quite scared. And Mum just burst out laughing. She said,
I've really done it now, Paul, this time. This is one of my greatest pranks ever. You see, this is not the 27th of December today, Paul. It's Christmas morning, Paul. Me and Cecil have been messing with your calendars for a few days before Christmas. We've messed with your head, Paul, and Merry Christmas, darling.
Then they all just burst out laughing. And I burst out into tears. But they were not tears of misery. They were tears of laughter. Songs of joy. And tears of laughter. They're all we need to lift our hearts.
Songs of joy and tears of laughter are all we need to lift our hearts. Songs of joy and tears of laughter are all we need to lift our hearts.
25th of December.
Again. We all sat round the TV. eating more Marks and Spencer's biscuits in another tub while opening our real presents. Though I obviously hadn't got any more presents from Mum and Dad because I didn't know, did I? So I'd given Auntie Beryl and Uncle Stanley their presents yesterday, the pack of ginger nuts each. I thought it was fitting given that Uncle Stanley used to be ginger. Now he's bald as a Cecil. I opened my presents. Ooh, there were loads of them. Far too numerous to list, couldn't believe it. Needless to say, there was electronic gadgets, a watch with a tiny camera in, which, a camcorder, so many food and drink items that I can't even remember them, and enough fresh socks to keep my feet toasty till doomsday. I was a bit grumpy about the socks by the seventh pair, but it's all right because I got a Nintendo Wii and I got a remote control car and I got a drone and I got a drawing tablet, which I can't draw on it, but Cecil says that you might show me how to draw a bosom, but I don't know if they will or not. Dad got 4 toupees and Mum got a thing for removing leg hair painlessly, though she used it on me and it wasn't painless at all. My eyebrow is never going to grow back. For lunch, well, dinner, we had a massive turkey. I even had to leave some of the lunch, dinner, because there was just so much. And then we fell asleep watching the Queen's speech, whereby Uncle Stanley just sort of shouted at us to wake up. And he made us all stand up because he loves the Queen so much. I'm sure he got an erection. Then we played on my new PlayStation games until Doctor Who came on and we were slightly disappointed. I think this has been one of the best Christmas days I've ever had. Mum and her pranks are just, you can't beat that woman for a pranky. When she gets it in her mind she's going to prank you, you better just roll with the punches because she's going to prank you good and proper. She should be on a Beatles about or something. I didn't see this one coming at all. She sideswiped me. She's the prank queen. I can't even imagine how she managed to make me think it was Christmas Day early. How'd you make someone think 2 days has passed when it hasn't? I don't know. All I can do is marvel at a Darren Brown like genius. So,
26th of December again.
Not again, just one again, Cecil, please.
Sorry.
Not much of interest has happened today. That is not to say that, you know, I've not had an interesting day to myself, but, you know, I've just played with toys and ta. I thought it'd be hilarious to video Uncle Stanley on the toilet, then play it back to everybody else with my spy watch. That backfired. I plugged the USB for it from the watch into the TV, you know, after leaving the watch recording in the toilet all morning. And I began to play the footage in front of everyone in the... I've got a burp that won't come out. Oh, that's better. I need winding. So I plugged the watch into the computer and began to play back the morning's footage from the toilet in front of everybody. Mum, Dad, Uncle Stanley and Aunt Beryl were all there. And then as soon as Uncle Stanley realised what the video was of, he literally screamed, threw his cup of tea on the floor and ran over at me to turn it off. On the TV, we just see Uncle Stanley pulling his trousers and pants down, and then we see his dangling man bits. Then he pulled something out of his trouser pocket and just started to bend over quite badly. But then he ripped the TV. No, he didn't rip the TV. He ripped the watch out the TV. But I didn't get to see it because I was shocked at Uncle Stanley. But everybody else saw what he did. They wouldn't tell me what it was. But they were just stood there, mouths agog. Like some kind of... They were traumatised almost. Uncle Stanley had the watch in his hand and he just threw it at the wall and it shattered into pieces. He then claimed that he knew I was recording and he was just doing it for a joke, but nobody believed him. And Mum said, "Nobody eat another Toblerone." And then it was a really awkward 10 minutes after that. And everyone just sort of sat down in silence, reading books, and I just sat there like, what's going on, what happened, I didn't get to see. And then Mum farted very loudly and she had to leave the room, and then we all had a good laugh at her.
4 hours later, Uncle Stanley suddenly declared that his piles were playing up, and that's what he was doing with that thing, whatever it was. Nobody believed him, but, you know, what can you do?
27th of December.
All right, Cecil.
I'm a little wistful, Paul. There's only 3 more pages for you to read.
I know, it's drawing close, Cecil. Don't get too emotional, like a Blue Peter presenter leaving. Let's just crack on with it. 27th of December. Tony and his wife came round this afternoon for a meal. And I don't mean they came round for an ethnic boy. They just came round for some food. They brought almost half a lamb, by the looks of it. It's huge. That's 2 days in a row where I've been so full, I can't even polish off the leftovers. That's so rare for Chunky Paul Thacks. And that's another reason why I love Christmas. Just so much food, you can gorge yourself like a bastard. And many presents. And people are nice to me. Tony's wife kissed me on the face this morning. Well, this evening, sorry. She pushed her bosoms up against mine, I'm sure she did. See, we were playing charades again, and she was using me to demonstrate the film Indecent Proposal, but nobody guessed it. And then I had to leave the room quickly and do something. It's a good job I left the room, actually, because apparently Mum's charade was Basic Instinct, a film which I've never seen, but I've heard a great deal about. I can't imagine what Mum did for that mime, and I don't want to imagine it, but I have just imagined it. Oh, God. This evening, Dad was getting quite angry about not receiving the key for the silver trinket box, and he says if it doesn't come in the next few days, he's going to get it open one way or the other. I'd, to be honest, forgotten about the bloody thing. I ran into the kitchen, got Tony's blowtorch that he lent us for doing creme brulee, but he wouldn't let me use it. Silly old sausage.
28th of December.
Almost all of the Christmas food and drink is gone now. We had one heck of a party last night. I can't really remember most of it. After writing yesterday's diary entry, I went back downstairs because I'm sure I heard a Pringle can get popped. Thought I'm getting in on that. I hope it's a salt and vinegar once, and it was. Eugene had come round and he was handing out legal, apparently anyway, highs. I said I didn't want none, thanks, I'm fine. I don't need highs. I'm quite perky as it is. So he spiked my name brand cola, which I won't mention on this podcast, because I don't want to give Coca-Cola the beverage of publicity.
The beverage of publicity, Paul?
Yes, I did that on purpose. It's fine.
And you said Coca-Cola.
I know I said Coca-Cola, Cecil. That was the joke, you spasm.
Oh, sorry, I didn't get that.
It's densely packed, Cecil, with sarcasm, irony, layers and layers upon which you just don't understand, do you? You know, no comedy nouns about you whatsoever.
I just like listening to your voice, Paul. It's monotonous and tedious. Puts me to sleep. I love it.
Son of a bitch. Lost my players now. Eugene had come round and was handing out legal, apparently, highs. I said I didn't want any, so he spiked my name brand cola. I vaguely remember something about playing adult Pictionary. I don't know. I've not got out of bed. I feel a bit funny. I remember something about there was a drawing and it looked like an old man, but it wasn't an old man. It was just a very wrinkly cock.
Paul!
Why was this all?
Sorry.
Just been downstairs to see Mum and Dad and get my mid-afternoon breakfast. Apparently 40 minutes after I went to her bed last night, start that again. Apparently I went to bed 14 minutes after Eugene had given me the drugs last night, and everybody else stayed up till 5 a.m. and Tony's wife apparently ran around in the nude outside for a dare because it was snowing, and she made a snow angel with the bosoms. Nobody took any pictures, and I'm not entirely sure it happened. Still, she kissed me on the cheek. That's something. Can use that. Mum and Dad didn't get out of bed till nearly 8 p.m. this evening. so I spent most of the days watching DVDs. Mostly Ironside. Mostly. I'd never figure out who the killer is in these kind of programmes. I'd make a rubbish Poirot. Probably mostly because I can't grow a moustache or speak French. It took me till 10 p.m. to realise that Beryl and Stanley had gone home today. They had to go to his sister's in Nuneaton's, which is of no consequence, and I don't really know why I put that in my diary. Although Auntie Beryl and Uncle Stanley seem to have left some of the clothes there. Or all the clothes here, sorry, it's gone very wrong. I wonder what they went wearing. I bet they were still on drugs, weren't they?
Idiots.
29th of December.
It snowed really heavily today. So much that by the time me and Mum had made a snowman each outside, the lawn was restocked with enough new snow to make a third snowman. So we made me, Mum and Dad, rendered in snow. Mine was of course the roundest, and Mum even managed to get my ears right. She's very good. I did Mum's. She wasn't happy with the amount of detail I was putting into the bosoms. She said I'd made them far too pert and large. I just said, well, I didn't want to tell her that I was actually doing Ruth Madoc. You know, I didn't realise we were doing each other, to be honest. I just thought we were making snow people. I pretended it was Mum because she looked really heartbroken when I...
Anyway, never mind.
Then we both did Dad. I put a tiny stick where Cecil's penis would be, and Mum laughed her head off and just said...
That's about right, that.
It was tiny, it was like a twiglet. And I just said to her,
too much information,
in a very camp way, and she looked at me askance. Then we dressed the snow people, me in a t-shirt, Cecil won me put a toupee on, and Mummy put one of her old tabards on. And then we just sort of walked in and didn't really know what to do with ourselves for the rest of the evening. So we watched Will-O-The-Wisp. It's quite sad. Don't know why, I just found it quite sad for some reason.
30th of December. Paul, you sound so wistful.
I'm wistful. It's the 30th of December, Cecil. It's getting to the end.
Yes, well, we've just... Come on now, come on. Hold it together.
All right. I feel like an admin assistant who's about to move up to a bigger company and take on the role of junior manager of a branch. You know, a little bit weepy, but you never know. There might be good things around the corner.
Yes, come on. Pull yourself together, man. 30th of December.
New Year's Eve is almost upon us. And what am I going to do for New Year's Eve? Well, Eugene's having a beach party. There'll be wine, women and waves, apparently. Tony's having a New Year's Eve barbecue, which is a crazy thing to do because it's going to be freezing and dark as nighttime. Because it will be nighttime at midnight, won't it, New Year's Eve? Her mum and dad are staying in to watch Big Ben. I don't know why, like I say this every time, they do this every year and mum cannot stand a repeat. Never changes, does it? It's just 12 bongs. And why don't they change it up? Do 13 once. That'd freak everybody out, wouldn't it? What I'm thinking is I might not welcome in the new year. I might just refuse to acknowledge it altogether. And stay in this year. You know, instead of turning it into disgusting January, I might make up my own months like Spamuary or the month of 1,000 burps. Oof. No, because that would make my Hand of the World 2005 calendar obsolete. Oh, there's a little world, a window into the world of when this was written. 2004. Started writing it 2003, if I recall correctly. It took 2 years, Jesus. Anyway, so I better see you in the new year. But who with? Well, don't know. Useful, isn't it, for you? Mum was in a foul mood today because she caught a cold and she slipped over in the wrapping paper. Because, yes, we've left the wrapping paper on the floor since the first pretend Christmas. It's mostly been kicked into the corner, but there's the few odd strays with sellotape in that keeps creeping out. Then, because the wrapping that Dad did used far too much sellotape, so it means if you get your foot caught in it, you're going down. Oof, it just doesn't tear, you see. It's just coated in plastic, like most of the world's oceans. You know, it's all right if you fall onto the sofa or the inflatable foot poof, but if you fall into the mantelpiece and break two china clowns, you're going to have a bad time. Especially if Mum does it, because when Mum hurts herself, she takes that blame out on everybody else, because it's never, ever her fault. Bloody thing.
Oh, 31st of December! The final reading! But a load, oh! But a lot of door! But a lot, oh! But a lot of door, it all!
Ow, you fuck! What you hit me for? Can we just get on with this, Sissel? I don't need you doing the entire final countdown. Please, I just want to, you know, I've got things to do. My Stagnite video to edit yet. Oh, Jesus. What? Shut up, come on.
It's the 1st of November now, Paul. You should have had that done.
I know it's the 1st of November, Sissel. I've been a little bit preoccupied at the moment. Just shut up. Say it again.
31st of December.
Well, New Year's Eve. It's looking like it's going to be a very low-key affair. I think tonight what I'm going to do is I'm just going to sit in my bedroom with Teddy Watkins and think about things. It's sad to think you, dear diary, will be last year's news. It's a horrible thing to happen. We've been inseparable all the past year. It's been very eventful. But, as I've said before, and I will say again, that's the relationship betwixt diary and diary writer. We both knew this was a one-year gig, a 365-day gig, give or take a day or two, depending on Mum's pranks. You know, although I move on to a fresh new computer file, or a paper-based one that I keep under my bed. Sometimes I write that, but my handwriting's so bad. There's no point in writing, it's illegible sometimes. But you, dear diary, are going to just stay here in my computer. Who knows, though? If this gets published, billions of people could be reading you in hundreds of different languages. Oof, that reminds me, I better delete those 3 weeks we went on holiday to the Isle of Lesbos. Boy, did I get the wrong idea. So, dear diary, I will raise a glass of Advocaat to you and shed a tear. For it's been an emotional year, with its ups and downs, and sort of protracted periods of tedium. Ooh, hang on. Hey, someone's pounding on the door downstairs. Excuse me, dear diary, I've got to go.
1st of January.
Shut up, we're not doing that, Cecil, I'm not carrying on.
No, that's all it says.
What does your aunt say? Technically, it's the 1st of January now, but I'm only writing on the 1st of January because I've got important things that have to go in this dear diary. It's a footnote, if you will. It's 3:34 a.m. in the morning of the 1st of January, but technically it's still New Year's Eve, so shush. All right. Tony, Eugene and Toby were all at the door, that's who were pounding on the front door. With their arms just full of food and boozes. This was before New Year's Eve had ticked over. Their parties had all been pretending. I think they were just hoping that we'd all go around to their houses. But as we all refused, they came to us, as usual. You know, so the festivities of the night began in earnest. In much as that Eugene drank a bottle of whiskey in 7 minutes and then passed out on the stairs. Then, at 17 minutes to midnight, it happened. Dad, who had drunk a full bottle of imitation Baileys over the evening, and he had then a shandy which tipped him over the edge. Cecil said,
"Right, that's it, Paul. Let's go get the blowtorch. And let's get this cocking son of a bitch silver trinket box open, you bastard."
So I was tipsy, yes, certainly, but I wasn't inebriated in such a fashion that I couldn't waddle off to the kitchen and get it. So I grabbed the a blowtorch, sorry, and some oven gloves, because I thought it through. And I came waddling back into the front room. So we placed the box on Mum's metal table thing. Don't know why that's important, but we put it on a non-flammable object. And I, being the least inebriated one, took the small but powerful flame to the lock. I held it there for 3 minutes. The metal of the silver trinket box was getting red hot. Then all of a sudden smoke began to bellow from inside. Dad's worst fears had come to fruition. The contents were on fire. I jammed a wooden spatula into the red hot lock part of it and it opened slightly. And Dad just sort of poured in a can of shandy into it. Jesus. The flames that were shooting out the small opening died down and we slowly managed to pry the box open. I tipped the contents onto the metal table. They were black and charred and floating in a sea of smoke and weak continental lemonade and beer. We drained out the beer and tipped the contents onto another table and Dad slowly began to inspect the items. Clearly shaking, visibly and mentally, Cecil sifted through the things. Everything he picked up, he just said, "Oh my God! Oh Jesus!" But he wouldn't let anybody else see. He just kept making even worse noises like, "Oh my... No! I can't... How is... Oh my God!" But it all got too much for me. I made a grab for whatever was in Cecil's hand and I held them in my shaking hands. They were wet, warm and mostly burnt, but three of them were almost unaffected by the fire. And I couldn't believe what I'd seen and what I was still seeing. In my hand, I held a small selection of incredibly pornographic playing cards from the 1940s. My hands were shaking so badly I could hardly make out the images, but of the 9 images I did see, they were fully naked ladies, yes in black and white, but they were in some very explicit poses. I could see all the bits, bobbles, flobbles and tobbles, and in 3 of the 9 cases, well, there was things going in various places. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Finally, after all these years, I was seeing something that eluded me for all these years. If I'm honest, it threw up more questions than answers. They all looked very confusing, but by God, was it arousing. I saw Dad, who was about to lurch for me to grab them out of my hand, so I jumped to my feet and ran back to my room to hide them for further inspection with a very powerful magnifying glass. Then I went back downstairs and Cecil said,
"Oh, fine, just keep them. But please read this to me, Paul. I can't focus."
And there was a piece of paper which had mostly escaped the fire, so, and it read thusly. "Cecil, you have to read this because it's from your dad."
"Right. Hello, my name is Bertram Thax. In this box you will find the rudest thing to ever be printed. These playing cards are fucking disgusting. The naked ladies depicted here are horrendous, heinous and wrong. Women are delicate creatures who shouldn't be shown doing the acts depicted herein. If any of these cards fell into the wrong hands, they could be reproduced and printed en masse. And in my opinion, this would ruin our society, bringing destruction and a level of depravity not seen since Sodom and Gomorrah. It must not be allowed. If you have found this note and these cards, for Christ's sake, burn them. I would have done it myself, but I'm scared of fire. Thank you, I've been Bertram Thax. P.S. Cecil, if you are reading this, you are adopted."
Cecil was yet again flabbergasted, but he was quite philosophical about it. He said,
"Oh, I'm nearly 82, it hardly matters.
He then poured himself a ginormous whiskey and he looked at the silver trinket box a bit more. Inside were numbers, apparently latitude and longitude, and the number 38276, and some kind of hieroglyph. I looked at Cecil, and Cecil looked at me, and then he just said,
"Oh, fuck it!"
And then he threw the silver trinket box in the bin. Then we all sat around watching outtakes of 1980s sitcoms on the internet till about midnight, which were New Year's Eve. And then revelry started, and Eugene gave everybody drugs, I think. Then I snuck off like a golem to look at those pictures. Oh, there's the noise. And silence. So, I snuck up into my bedroom and found the old playing cards. Now, I was not pressured by the looks of Cecil looking at me and Mum looking at me. I got a good look at what I could see. There was bosoms on display, and that's no mistake. But like I say, more questions were thrown up than they were answered. Why do ladies' bits just look like black? I don't understand, they're just like some black, massive mat of black fuzz. What the hell's that about? Don't understand. The print quality was very poor, and I'm not entirely sure if two of them were cartoons. It's been a massive disappointment when I finally got to look at them with a magnifying glass. Never mind, still sexy, still did the job. Well, Happy New Year, dear diary. I'm going to miss you. Miss you like an old pair of pants. You're comfortable, familiar, and frightfully dirty in some places. Oh, that sunny was so sexual. If I had to sum up this year in a kind of written speech, song, or poem, it would go like this. Dawn comes. Twilights fade, languid walks, solemnic dynamity, reluctance indifference cascading like waterfalls of memories. Sitting under the raindrop typewriter, tarrying over thoughts of noons past, to come and have been. Shadows of thoughts flitter over the mind like waves of fear and hope. I've no erection currently. Don't know what that means, but poetry is just stringing weird words together now, isn't it? Don't even have to rhyme. So now, I bid you a final and fond farewell, dear diary. I have to go, because I have done a trump, and I think a little bit of poo has come out. Thank you, and goodbye.
And that, as they say, ladies and gentlemen,
yep,
is indeed that.
Yep.
Paul? Yes. Would you like to take a bow?
Okay, thank you, Cecil. I shall bow now.
Oh, fuck, I hit the microphone, you stupid bastard.
Idiot. You knew that would happen.
Ow, you bastard.
Cocked it now. Stupid. This is expensive, Cecil. What's going on with that? Oh, that's buggered. If anybody would like to donate a new microphone money to me, please send any money to PayPal to me, please. Thank you.
So, Paul, how do you feel this podcast has gone?
Well, it's gone the same way everything else I've done has gone, Cecil. It's all right, it's out there, that's all I can say. Nobody listens to it, I don't care.
Yes, your mother hates it.
Does she?
Yes, she won't listen to it. She listened to the first month and said it was appalling.
And yet she still sits on and does the voice, though. That's dedication to the craft, isn't it, Cecil?
Yes, it is.
Monday, kitten, stop, don't get off the microphone. Stupid bastard. And what's your opinion of it, Cecil?
It started off a bit rough and ready, Paul, but when you got into your stride, the quality really, really dropped off.
Oh, Cecil.
Yes, you went off script fairly often,
you let old people shout at you, and I think your reading voice is somewhat monotonous.
Well, Cecil, you know what, want me to do another one for next year?
Oh, Christ, no.
What shall we do next year for a podcast, then?
How about Chuffall, Paul?
Oh, well, that's not very nice, is it?
No, I'm going away now, Paul. I've got to go look at the internet.
Why?
No reason, Paul. No reason. To look at pictures of naked women in tabards.
Hey, Cecil. Well, I'm going now, podcast listeners. Happy Christmas, if you're listening to this before Christmas. Happy New Year's Eve, if that's the thing that people enjoy. Hate it myself, it's boring. Thank you for listening and enjoying, or just listening, and being appalled by some of the horrendous and rude things that have come out of my mind and mouth. I thank you for listening, and I repeat, please send me money. I thank you and goodbye for now. Until the next time. Goodbye.